Black Tech Green Money isn't just about telling the stories of successful black entrepreneurs. It's also about giving actionable and wealth-building strategies that help you protect the future of our communities. That's why we're pleased to be supported by State Farm Insurance. State Farm also believes that we must invest in our communities to achieve economic growth by sponsoring programs like the AXO, which rewards high school students for their academic achievements. State Farm believes that being better neighbors creates better communities. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
What's good, everybody? It is our favorite time of the year here at The Black Effect. We're heading down to Atlanta for the 2024 Black Effect Podcast Festival. And we're not going alone. Nissan is back as our partner, and they're continuing their Pitch Your Podcast Lounge at the festival, where you'll have the opportunity to pitch your podcast idea live and share it with the Black Effect team. So get those podcast ideas ready. And remember, you can count on Nissan to dial up the thrill in your adventures, no matter where life takes you. Visit blackeffect.com/podcast. Festival for more details.
My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big ROAS man. Then he just kept saying things like, the bigger the ROAS, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means calculating a return on ad spend. One thing's for sure. I'll be known as the ROAS man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/customer to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/customer. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work. In traffic, so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T. Enjoy this throwback episode of Black Tech Green Money over your holiday season. I'm Will Lucas, and this is Black Tech Green Money. I'm going to introduce you to some of the biggest names, some of the brightest minds, and brilliant ideas. If you're black in building or simply using tech to secure your bag, this podcast is for you. Everett Harper, CEO and co-founder of Trust, a human-centered software development company. He's also author of the new leadership book, Move to the Edge, Declare It Centered, which was published by Wiley earlier this year. He was previously director of customer acquisition and community at Linden Lab, maker of Second Life. A CEO and technologist who also hits many stages around the world to talk about diversity, equity, and inclusion, I asked Everett to speak on this. I get that there's a more imperative for diversity, but is it also profitable to hire, fund, promote, and support black people?
The quick answer is yes. And there is a research history both in academia and in practice for the last decade. Kathy Williams, for example, late great Kathy Williams, Dr. Kathy Williams, documented how that makes boards that have diverse boards have higher returns, diverse leadership teams, higher returns, the process of innovation, more diverse teams have better, they essentially less blind spots when coming up with a solution. So there's any number at different levels for the business case for all of those things. And that's before saying, oh, if my customers are diverse, I would need to have representation. So there's a lot of history at this point. The ship has already sailed.
So when you think about innovation, I don't remember which of the founders of Twitter who talked about this, but there was a founder of Twitter who talked about when you're trying to get people, when you're trying to find a success in a startup, the best thing you can do is not try to change what people already do, but make what they do more efficient. Because when you try to get people to change habits, you have an uphill, you know, battle to climb. And so can you talk about, there was an article I read that you had wrote this particular line. I'm going to read it back to you, and you may remember writing it. It says, "We have a culture of innovation," quote unquote, is a statement found on crumpled banners, rolled up posters, and trashed brochures of failed startups and shuttered businesses. Companies and investors have tried to shift, fund, or shock their employees into becoming more innovative. Then you went on to say, an infrastructure for innovation beats a culture of innovation. So those two concepts, the one that I positioned and what you just wrote, how should we think about innovation when we are Black founders, when we have a unique perspective in the marketplace and we're trying to build something, hopefully, that the world has never seen, that will, you know, provide us some capital that we can build, you know, generational wealth?
Yeah, good points. And I guess I was feeling spicy that day. So I think here's how I would think about it. Now, Twitter's culture, I don't know enough in the detail of how they think about culture to be precise about what they did. Because it may include an infrastructure. That I don't know. But what I do know is when you talk to BlackBerry and you talk to Deck and you talk to folks at companies that, or Xerox PARC, that had the innovations, however, they weren't able to put it in a system that enabled those innovations to scale or to be shared or to be sustainable. And it's really the system part that I'm talking about to make innovations actually come to light. So a different way to think about it is that, for example, when we, you know, with the pandemic and people said, oh, we're going to grit our teeth through this and we're going to make it through by sheer will and hard work. Well, after a couple months, that will starts to drop. You can't sustain heroism like that. But if you build a system that enables more people to benefit from that system without the same amount of toil, then you're able to get the innovations or any kind of innovations out into the market where it can be tested in with the customers.
So I'm of the mind that you don't have to look far for ideas for companies, but that there are problems that exist all around us. And can you talk a little bit about how do you admonish would-be entrepreneurs to maybe look more at their story and what is going on in their world to help them come up with concepts or ideas or projects that could ultimately become businesses to more authentically practice a new way of doing things that other people can employ also?
Yeah, so what I tell entrepreneurs with regard to that question is, you know, you start with a problem that you know that you experience, but you're only one person. The next thing to do immediately is to test it with other people around you. Is this compelling? Is it memorable? Does it solve a problem? Does it accelerate your life? And be real honest about that. That's actually the thing I love to do most. You'll get some people who will support you. That's still not good enough. That takes you to the next level. Then it's people that you haven't met before. And that's where the iteration and, you know, whether it's lean startup principles or other iteration principles, where you get out and you see whether your idea takes hold, whether people grab it, whether people are doing things on it, where you develop a platform for it. So, the testing with people that are around you is only the first step. It's validating that. And then it's, that might be a good idea, but is it a business? So you have to ask the other sets of questions. Are people going to pay for it? Are they going to devote their time for it? Are they going to build on it? Those are the next level questions that, frankly, I find more entrepreneurs miss that boat than they do with ideas, because I think people are full of different ideas. I'll say the second thing that I tell people. Everybody has your same idea. 10 people have the same idea you do right now, whatever it is. Six of those people will just be talking about it, thinking about it, whatever. Won't even write it down. The seventh and eighth person might have done a little testing, might have, like, you know, explored some avenues, but they got busy, got distracted. The ninth person actually is doing something about it, yeah. is actually testing it. Maybe they're raising a little bit of money. You want to be the 10th person who has done all of that and gone and put the diligence and the time into that thing. So the idea is not the original part. It's whether you're able to turn it into something that's a repeatable practice that people will buy.
There's this concept of, and I think it's like people like Peter Thiel who talk about this, like you have to have a unique perspective on things. Like, what is your unique value? Like, why should you be doing this thing? If you're going to an investor and they're like, you know, okay, we understand there's an opportunity in the marketplace, but why are you the one to solve this thing? And when I talk to entrepreneurs, sometimes not of, you know, Black descent or African-American descent or African descent, I should say, I find entrepreneurs who may be in wildly successful businesses, but they have no passion for the business that they're in. Maybe they do, street signs, right? Whatever it is that they do. And I wonder if you could play the other side of that conversation. Like, when is it okay for us to just be opportunists and see an opportunity in the marketplace and go do something about it?
There's no argument against that. That's for sure. I think it's funny when you talk about, why are you the person? If you're not the person, but you have 100,000 people saying that you are the person, doesn't matter whether I think you're the person or whether the investor thinks you're the person, there's 100,000 people back there that are buying my service who think I'm the person. They don't care about me. They care about the service. And so if you're trying to get funding and you have a whole bunch of traction, you have a whole bunch of crazy fans, that's big volumes. Now, they may be looking for other kinds of pattern matching, right? But results talk. So I think that's the first thing to think about when you were saying. And in terms of like taking opportunities, yeah, because sometimes you practice that, this one fails, but you learn some things. You take another crack at it a little while longer, a little bit later, another, and then it's the next idea that actually clicks. But if you're waiting for that perfect opportunity, probably aren't going to ever start. So if you see something before it, test it out and then hit that wall and say, yep, this is not the business I want to be in. That's much better than sort of waiting back and hoping for a perfect situation, because that's not going to ever happen.
Well, describe what that wall could look like. How do you know when it's time to hang it up? How do you know when it's time that I've been doing this long enough, or I've spent too much money, or I'm not getting this? Like, how do you know? What is the thing that says, yeah, this ain't it?
Yeah, that's a great question, because the entrepreneur wants to be persevering and wants to be diligent and like, don't take no for an answer. At least that's the ethos, right? That's the story. The reality is, from my experience and talking to other entrepreneurs, personally, there's like pragmatic things. You run out of money, right? That's it. And especially for our audience, you don't come with bags of like historical cash, right? So there's that. I think the more spiritual one, I think the heart of your question is when your kind of soul is no longer fed by this, and you don't wake up energized to try and overcome the next obstacle, because there will be obstacles. When the market is telling you, hey, nah, I'm not buying this. I had a nice spike at the beginning and then it flattened out. You might try a whole bunch of stuff, and if it's not moving the needle, then it's done. I'll tell you a quick story. When I was starting this company, I was originally doing a product company. It was called Tetherpad. It was about doing smart calendars for executive assistants. Originally it was for travel, but you know, it turned into the business thing. And this was around 2011 when smart calendars were starting to come out. And I had this prototype, and I was like, people complicated travel arrangements or whatever. And I said, where do I find travel people, where people travel? Bookstores, when they actually existed. And I went there and I had my little prototype. I went to the travel section and I asked people, hey, excuse me, would you use something like this? They were like pleasant and nice and interested a little bit, but no one said, oh my God, I have to have that. That is the greatest thing in the world. I knew that was not going to be a successful product. Because if I can't sell them face-to-face, how am I going to do that when I'm competing with millions of other sites to do travel? Sometimes the business case and the lack of response tells you everything you need to know that you need to go back to the drawing board, which is what I did.
How did you know that it wasn't just another feature that you needed? Because we can get feature hungry and have scope creep really, really easily because, okay, maybe my travel app doesn't, you know, wow the people, but if I added just this one other thing and then you find out there's another thing I got to add, How do you know it's not just a feature? How do you know when the feature is not going to do it?
Hey, everybody, this is Carrie Champion, and I'm here to announce that the 2024 Black Effect Podcast Festival is headed to Atlanta's very own Pullman Yards on April 27th. Last year was incredible, and this year will be even more thrilling, especially with Nissan coming back along for the ride. Nissan is returning with some empowering activations to support Black excellence in the STEAM fields. Have a podcast idea you've been eager to share with the culture? Well, Nissan is back with your Pitch Your Podcast Lounge. You'll have the chance to record your podcast idea and have it shared with the Black Effect Podcast Network team. But that's not all. Nissan is taking the stage to spotlight some of the HBCU scholars from their own Thrill of Possibility Summit. Nissan's action-packed weekend of community building, mentorship, and professional development for HBCU scholars pursuing professions in STEAM. The Black Effect Podcast Festival is the event you want to be at. You don't want to miss it because no matter where life takes you, Nissan will dial up the thrill in your adventures. Visit blackeffect.com/podcastfestival for more details.
State Farm Insurance gets it. Representation alone doesn't equate to authenticity. State Farm understands and wants to help protect our communities by investing in our future. Building off the hard work our parents have done before us, we all are looking to create generational wealth so that our families and generations behind us have a better starting point than we did. That begins with financial literacy. State Farm helps fund programs like Project Ready, a National Urban League program committed to the educational achievement of Black and Brown youth. To date, participants have been awarded over $11 million in scholarships offers as a direct result of contributions from State Farm. At Eating While Broke, we hear inspiring rags-to-riches stories on each episode from our guests, but with State Farm, you can begin to write your own success story. State Farm believes that being better neighbors creates better communities and have a long-lasting impact. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big ROAS man. Then he just kept saying things like, the bigger the ROAS, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means calculating a return on ad spend. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the ROAS man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/customer to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/customer. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It's packed with benefits to help unlock more value from your business purchases. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Because I was trying to ask the core value proposition, which was, do you have a problem traveling and arranging things for complex travel or for your family or whatever? The representation of that was my app, but really it was the question about what the core problem was. And what I got back was that it wasn't that important a problem to them. So I could add all the features in the world, but if it's not important to the buyer, it doesn't matter. So what I did was actually say, huh, maybe this is the right product, but it's the wrong audience. Who actually cares about this and is willing to pay for it? I went to executive assistants because they are paid to do complex arrangements for their executives. When I presented the same prototype with a little bit of, you know, reskinning, they were all over it because I nailed their problem. So that was the difference. I don't care about the features I'm adding until I understand the problem I'm trying to solve for the audience in the audience's own words or their own context.
I would consider you, you are a DEI expert, and if you would call yourself that, but you are somebody who speaks on DEI and, you know, are paid to speak on DEI. What is interesting about the current conversation about DEI that we're having, particularly at the corporate level? Let's start there. Like, some companies believe if they put some money into some inner city, you know, youth programs, then they're being diverse and you know, they're doing their job. Other companies believe if they hire a Black DEI officer, they're doing their job. What is interesting about this conversation to you, and how do we know if we're doing it right as corporate executives?
Yeah, I'll say just spicily, most of the conversation doesn't interest me because it's a lot of window dressing. Which is not to say that investing in a playground in a community is not a great thing. That's fantastic for the community, but that is not a sufficient DEI response for any corporation of any significant size. It's the initial drop in the bucket, for example. The reason I say that is the question I always ask people, and this is particularly after George Floyd and everybody was getting involved with, you know, DEI and trying to figure out racial injustice and white supremacy, et cetera. The question I would ask when people would come to me and say, hey, what can I do? I'd love your help. I said, well, what are you trying to do it for? How does this connect with your business model? This is a question you started with. And then there was like often a silence. I said, yeah, you need to figure out how it's connected to your business model. So that's the first thing, is it connected to your business model? And many people don't have that. Those that do start to make progress in ways that others do not. I think the other thing that's interesting to me about the conversation at the moment is the impact of remote work and how the market changes if you are now not just located in a particular place, but actually can recruit and expansively across the country. We've been remote since 2012. We wanted to have a diverse company. We're like, well, there isn't a full diversity here in the Bay Area, and those who are here are going to be heavily competed with, for talent. And we have, oh, by the way, we have Google and Facebook who can plop a bonus larger than someone's annual salary at our company. So we went to the rest of the country, and we have people in 30 states, and we have Black folks all over, and Hispanic, or Latina, Latinx, and MENA, and, but they're located where they are. And so that gets much more sustainable from our perspective. Now we have to go to the next level because other people have discovered it as well. So we have to figure out the next thing. But we've developed those networks of community that I think are going to be sustainable in the long run.
I wanted to go deeper on the remote work thing in a second, but I don't want to glance past something you just talked about, and that's that corporate commitment to actually making real lasting impact. How, after, you know, the sizzle is gone from that pan, after the immediate George Floyd, you know, impact, or, you know, police shootings or elections that have real consequence, after those initial triggers, how do we get corporate commitments to Black people, to minorities, to diversity, equity, and inclusion? How do we get them to last past that moment in time?
Yeah. So the way I think about the questions I would ask, and so it's the dialogue that actually kind of starts to spur action. One is it connected to your business model? Two, who's running it? If it is a initiative within a small marketing team, your organization, I don't take it seriously. Why don't I take it seriously? Because as soon as there's a budget cut, as soon as there's a downturn, Budgets are tight. That discretionary program goes away. It needs to be led by the executive, and it needs to be led by the C-suite, and it needs to be led by the CEO. That person needs to come in front and say, I believe in this. It's part of our business. Even if we don't know specifically what our goals are, I am personally committed to making this happen. And then I have people who are going to execute. So it's got to come from them, and it's got to be on repeat. So that's the question I would then ask. CEO involved, how long, is there support for that? And then how are you going to roll that out as a project? I think the other thing in terms of asking is, I'll quote my friend Damian Hooper Campbell, who I interviewed for the book. He said, diversity is measured in quarters and years. Making a dent in diversity, equity, yeah, inclusion is measured in quarters and years, not days and weeks. And I absolutely, completely agree with that. Even for the well-intentioned companies, if it was easy to recruit a bunch of Black folks, they would have done it already. But we're heavily competed for, or the networks aren't there, or you're changing cultures internally. Anybody knows about culture change, know that takes quarters and years, not days and weeks, even if you're well-intentioned. So what's your plan, executive, for having a years-long strategy where you can actually move the needle? And that's where we get some agreement and some alignment of what's realistic, from my opinion.
You probably recognize there is a quickly moving BTO resurgence here, like back to office. Companies are going back to office. I think Apple announced it yesterday or today, depending on when you're listening to this. Apple recently announced they want their people back in the office. Is that dangerous to this conversation of diversity in the workplace?
I think it's really interesting. There's a couple different points to it. One, I think the cat's out of the bag, frankly, in terms of people saying, huh, do I really have 2 hours of my day or 3 hours of my day to be commuting? In an era where you have housing prices rising and folks can't afford to live near the city center, that's even more of an issue. And it affects Black folks in particular. If I'm in Mississippi or if I'm in Georgia, if I'm in Atlanta, not only do I have amazing Atlanta-based companies, but I'm attracting attention from all over the country. Why would I want to leave Atlanta if you enjoy that community? I think the other side of it gets interesting is, and what I think the other side of it is, how do companies that used to be in office and who are going hybrid or fully remote, how are they managing the mentorship and sponsorship of new employees, particularly Black and Brown employees? Here's how it works. If it had been in an office and it's a little bit of drive-by and so forth, meetings or lunches or whatever, hey, I'd love to get like a coffee with you, and you get some informal mentoring and so forth, that's awesome. If you move to hybrid, how does that happen? It doesn't just automatically, it has to have an intention. And so a company would have to say, we understand that, and we're committed to either identifying our star folks or emerging talent and getting them back in that office for a quarter, so that we can kind of get that trust building that happens person to person or face to face, or we do some other rotation system. If there's a remote person who isn't getting that kind of mentorship and the culture supports it face to face, they are at a deficit. So one would have to be thoughtful about setting that up.
So what do you say to Black and Brown employees who want to work at the biggest companies in the world, but it's, all to live in the Bay is not the cheapest place in the world to live, but I may be talented enough an engineer. And then now I 6 months ago, I had this opportunity. What happens when I want to work in some of the biggest places, have some of the biggest impact on the world via the technology perspective? And now they want me to uproot my family, and I got to bring all of us to the Bay or to New York or, think of a place.
Yeah. What I would say is, to broaden actually the landscape here. You said want to work at the biggest companies. I'd say, why do you want to work at the biggest companies? There are lots of amazing companies with great brands that don't have to be the FAANG companies. And in fact, I think there's probably many, many opportunities that go under the radar for making impact, for propelling your career, to having a great sense of culture. So I would broaden the scale to other sorts of companies. The second thing I'd say is negotiate. First, create optionality, right? That one company wants you to move. That's a great time to look. Are other companies maybe looking for me and allowing me to stay at home? I bet there are. Now you have some negotiating leverage. And I think the other thing is uprooting your family is a big deal. And that support from a family is a big deal to one's happiness. That's serious consideration. Last thing I'd say is there are definitely conversations I've had with folks, and the market is now kind of a little soft, right? There's some layoffs happening, slowing down hiring. I think it's an opportunity to sort of take stock and say, what is it that I'm trying to do with my career? And how can certain companies advance the ball in this situation? Because sometimes it might be great to take that 1 year thing, uproot your family for a year, get the brand, get the money, and then go to another company. So I think broaden the opportunities is the message, and broaden your options so you're not just locked into one way of advancing your career. There are many ways to advance a career.
A couple of years ago, you guys embraced salary transparency. And I want you to talk about why that's important or was important for you guys and steps to doing that well, because I imagine there's a large opportunity there to cause more ruckus in the beginning, you know, especially in the beginning. But what are the lasting implications of doing that, both on the positive side and negative side, and steps to doing it well?
Yeah. So just for context, we did it in 2017. So it's been in place since then. The reason we did it was for equity, for racial and gender equity. Lots of great companies, lots of bad companies were paying people different depending on their gender. Lots of well-intentioned companies didn't want to do that, but they allowed for some negotiation. And so, for example, if you if you negotiate a 5% higher salary than I do, right, for the same position, same work, 5 years later, you've done fantastic work. You've both gotten promotions and both got a 20% bump every single year. That difference then amplifies, right? That's the problem. And then 5 years later, you have a company that says, the employee says, wait a minute, I'm being paid how much less? Now the company has lost a valuable employee with all the institutional memory. That problem. So we wanted to avoid that. And the quickest way we wanted to do it was say, let's make it transparent. Let's make internally transparent. And then let's go through a process for engaging our employees to make that happen so that there isn't a ruckus.
Hey, everybody, this is Carrie Champion, and I'm here to announce that the 2024 Black Effect Podcast Festival is headed to Atlanta's very own Pullman Yards on April 27th. Last year was incredible, and this year will be even more thrilling, especially with Nissan coming back along for the ride. Nissan is returning with some empowering activations to support Black excellence in the STEAM fields. Have a podcast idea you've been eager to share with the culture? Well, Nissan is back with your Pitch Your Podcast Lounge. You'll have the chance to record your podcast idea and have it shared with the Black Effect Podcast Network team. But that's not all. Nissan is taking the stage to spotlight some of the HBCU scholars from their own Thrill of Possibility Summit. Nissan's action-packed weekend of community building, mentorship, and professional development for HBCU scholars pursuing professions in STEAM. The Black Effect Podcast Festival is the event you want to be at. You don't want to miss it, because no matter where life takes you, Nissan will dial up the thrill in your adventures. Visit blackeffect.com/podcastfestival for more details.
State Farm Insurance gets it. Representation alone doesn't equate to authenticity. State Farm understands and wants to help protect our communities by investing in our future. building off the hard work our parents have done before us. We all are looking to create generational wealth so that our families and generations behind us have a better starting point than we did. That begins with financial literacy. State Farm helps fund programs like Project Ready, a National Urban League program committed to the educational achievement of Black and Brown youth. To date, participants have been awarded over $11 million in scholarships offers as a direct result of contributions from State Farm. At Eating While Broke, we hear inspiring rags-to-riches stories on each episode from our guests, but with State Farm, you can begin to write your own success story. State Farm believes that being better neighbors creates better communities and have a long-lasting impact. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It's packed with benefits to help unlock more value from your business purchases. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
AT&T Connects and Ode to Podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
So what we did basically, and I'll just, it's actually in the book fairly explicitly, there's a step-by-step process that we use that anybody can follow. But the first thing we did was really simple. Are you going to leave if we make our salaries transparent? And 19 out of 20 people said, no, we'll not. And 1% said, I'm a little uncomfortable, but let's go for it, right? So that's the first thing. Second thing was we involved them in the solution. So there was lots of research to do. Is this the right problem solving? Are there other alternatives? What other companies are doing this? But we had a committee based on leadership and employees that participated. Why does that matter? Because they're going to bring different perspectives than I would. And whatever solution we come up with, they're going to participate in. That's going to enable people to feel like, yeah, I helped design this. Finally, the big part of the work, we didn't have our leveling and we didn't have our rubrics very well laid out. That took, of a 7-month process, that took about 4.5 months to do that right. Any company should have that anyway, regardless of whether they're going to be salary transparent or not. By the time we announced it, after 7 months, the reaction was basically ho-hum, because we brought everybody along for the ride. We also did one other thing that is a fun piece. It's called the pre-mortem. I talk about it in the book as well. And it's basically a technique to enable you to project into the future and try and avoid problems. So the quick question you ask is, we did this. Okay, team, it's 3 weeks before launch. I want you to project 9 months down the road. The thing is launched, it's reached all the people, et cetera, et cetera. In 9 months, it is a complete disaster. Whatever. Everything's gone wrong. Everybody hates us. Yeah. We've lost customer, blah, 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 blah. What went wrong?
Yeah.
And I usually start by saying, yeah, it was me. I wasn't paying attention. I didn't answer that phone call. I was slow to respond, right? It loosens people up a little bit, because what you're trying to do is have people be creative. Then it starts to come out. Well, that stakeholder we didn't talk to. This person we didn't talk to. Oh, we forgot this step. Once you gather a bunch of those, you work backwards. So how could we mitigate that possibility? It is amazing how many things come up that you, even the most diligent person, did not think of because they didn't imagine the failure case down the road. So that's what we did with salary equity as well. I'm sorry, pay transparency as well. So we tested this thing and we iterated it, and we continue to iterate to this day.
I liked what you just brought up about the pre-mortem, because it blends
very well into this next question is, you know, you guys were remote even before COVID. You talked about 2011, 2012, you guys were fully remote.
That's right.
And there was obviously some forward thinking there. And so others can be forward thinking. What was the insight you had back then about being fully remote, hiring people from all over the world so that other people can try to figure out ways they can be successful when they actually write that pre-mortem?
Yeah. That's a great question. We decided to go fully remote to solve a problem. Kind of going back to your entrepreneur opportunity question. My first co-founder and I, Mark, invited our third co-founder, Jen, to be part of the team, to be official co-founder. She gave us an answer that we didn't expect. I'd love to join, but my husband just got a fellowship to be in the Balkans and in Western Europe and in Scotland for the next 18 months on a fellowship. Can we work that out? And I was like, that is not what I expected, but okay, let's start figuring it out. The solution we came up was really straightforward. Show up on time, get an Airbnb or a place you're renting that has great Wi-Fi, and make our work transparent. Those were three things. And then we just said, let's roll with it and see what happens. From there, we started to develop, here's better ways to display the work. And then we started to say, how can we involve other people in the solution? Well, all of those things are scalable. Show up on meetings on time. Okay, we're using Pivotal Tracker to display our work. Now there's Miro and there's all this in Asana and all these other places. And get good Wi-Fi. So it was sort of a problem solving exercise that we then could scale and that we could share, and it's sustainable. And that's really where it started from. And we've had to build things, of course, in the meantime, but I think that's with the core of it. So I think the message to entrepreneurs is, what are problems that you can solve simply and quickly and make them experiments? And it could be anything from HR to remote to a product idea, and then just try it out and then learn and trash it and do the next thing if that doesn't work.
Black Tech Green Money is a production of Blavity Afrotech on the Black Effect Podcast Network and iHeartMedia. It's produced by Morgan DeBon and me, Will Lucas, with additional production support by Love Beach and Rose McLucas. Special thank you to Micah Davis and Vanessa Serrano. Learn more about my guests and other tech disruptors and innovators at Afrotech.com. The video version of this episode will drop the Black Tech Green Money on YouTube next week, so tap in. Enjoying Black Tech Green Money? Share this with somebody. Go get your money. Peace and love.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
AT&T Connects and Ode to Podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
You know that feeling when you walk into your home, take a deep breath, and feel new? Well, that's what it's like to use Clorox Scentiva. Because Clorox Scentiva smells like coconut, cleans like Clorox, and feels like energy. It'll elevate any cleaning routine to not just clean, but also make every room smell like a tropical coconut getaway. Discover how Clorox Scentiva's powerful clean and refreshing scents can transform your space. Get yours in coconut or other fabulous scents at a nearby retail store.
When it comes to your job, you're likely well-versed, but what about your skin? Life's busy enough. It doesn't have to be a big chore to get well-versed skin. Check out the dermatologist-tested cruelty-free vegan skincare products from Verst. It's under $25 and available at your local Target store, making it easier than ever to take care of your skin from head to toe. Podcast listeners, here's an exclusive deal. 15% off at VERSEDskin.com with code MEDIA15. That's VERSEDskin.com with code MEDIA15. Verst, available at Target.
What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.